Hey, everybody. Welcome to Defy. This is a podcast about stories, because everyone has a story to tell. We're all about sharing stories of women and non-binary individuals and how they have defined the odds, persevered through incredible circumstances, and transformed their lives. Is this a show about perfection? No, because it doesn't exist. Is this a show full of empty self-help quotes for you to put on your Instagram? No, that is not our style. This is a show about breaking the rules, creating your own path, and being your true self. Because remember, well-behaved women rarely make history. Non-binary folks excel at breaking models. So come on, let's get out there and defy. Would you take me home? I wanna ride it. You wanna know, ride it. Just lose control, ride it. Ride it. My soul, ride it. Ride it. Let me feel you, ride it. Till the lights down low, ride it. From head to toe, ride it. Okay, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Defy Podcast. And today I'm talking to two of what I affectionately call my little sisters. I hope that's not like offensive to you guys, but I mean, straight up, I'm way older than you. We all know that. And I've always felt, you know, so protective of both of you since we first met. And so I wanted to, you know, you guys can introduce yourself. I mean, I think a lot of people know who you are, but why don't you say, like, who are you right now? Like, hey.
Hey, it's me, Liat. I'm Liat. I mean, if the audience is behavior analyst, maybe you know me. I talk a lot on Instagram, on my Instagram handle. Mm-hmm. Living here in Dallas, doing my thing, disseminating ABA. What else is interesting? I have two French bulldogs who I'm obsessed with.
Obsessed. I'm obsessed also. So obsessed.
Like, obsessed. I like to do photo shoots of them. And I'm sure I'll get more. As soon as you ask me a question, I'm like, okay. I spew. It's like opening a can of worms. There'll be a lot to say.
Okay, girl. What up, Casey?
What up, Sarah? I'm Casey. I am the second part of the Behavior Bitches. Mm-hmm. I teach with Liat at Study Notes ABA. I like to call myself like the Wizard of Oz behind the email, letting y'all know it's a really crazy job to be managing customer service for our company. Yeah.
So this is like what we're going to talk about today, because obviously we have people that listen to the Defy podcast that are behavior analysts. We have people that listen to the Defy podcast that aren't. But what I think is really going to be unique in our conversation is you guys are very similar to me in that you have really kind of carved your own unique path in behavior analysis in the field that we all are a part of. And that has been, you know, an incredible gift. It's allowed you to, you know, have tremendous reach, but there's also, you know, frankly, kind of a dark side. And I wanted to have all of us talk together just kind of about that. And especially looking at what it's been like to truly grow this business, grow the podcast and grow Study Notes ABA from a social media platform, because this has, you know, this is controversial in the field of behavior analysis. Oh, and sidebar. Okay. I watched this new documentary last night on HBO Max called Fake Famous. I highly recommend this. So this guy,
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. Fake Famous. Okay. So this guy, Nick Bolden, is a reporter for the New York Times and Vanity Fair. And he has been, you know, reporting on social media and technology for years and years. And he finally kind of came to this realization. He lives in LA. He's like, are we like really helping people? And, you know, what does it really mean to be famous? And this whole idea, you know, of like people being famous just for being famous. And he had some really interesting statistics that he talked about, that there are over like 10 million or 30 million people that have over a million Instagram followers. The money that's flowing through, especially to Instagram influencers. And, you know, now that millennials, of course, which we all know I am not part of that generation. I'm not a millennial, but y'all are. And even for, you know, kind of younger people in the field, that it used to be that people, when they grew up, they're like, hey, I want to be a nurse. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a doctor. And now people are like, oh, I want to be famous on like Instagram or YouTube.
Or YouTube. I think that's every kid's dream nowadays. It used to be like, I want to be a veterinarian. Now every kid's like, mom, I just want to be a YouTuber. And some kid the other day was actually asking me for help. And I'm like, dude, I know Instagram. YouTube is not my
jam. But that it's this whole idea of like that this is a, you know, kind of a, this goal now of like, hey, I want to be, you know, famous for just being well known in this whole kind of like posturing lifestyle. And so the whole thrust of this documentary is that they had this casting call in LA, and Nick and his production company picked three individuals that they wanted to see do this whole social experiment to see if they could make them like Instagram famous. And I'm not going to do any spoiler alerts here, but it was fascinating. And I remember I, you know, finished watching it last night and I was like, I don't know if I'm like, should be more horrified, because I actually do like Instagram, like way more than Facebook. Me and Facebook, I like, if I could break up with Facebook,
shit.
I would
have done it. No shit, the matching law. The filters are way better on Instagram. That's what I said the other day. I was like, this is a perfect example. Like, I'd rather look at myself on Instagram than Facebook. Those filters are like, wow, they'll put a little bird in the scene, but they're not like fixing my crash on my face.
Right. And also Facebook obviously like trends towards much more kind of like an older demographic. And frankly, I'm tired of like all the arguing, but like I'm getting ahead of myself. So let's first start. Let's talk about our meet cute. And that's like a term of when like, you know, two people or, you know, a couple when they first meet and like, you know, in Hollywood and how is it so romantic? And it all started for us in Houston in 2019. I was helping to run and speak at this ABA business boot camp. And I'd already like reached out to you and Casey, I kind of knew you. And also this was really interesting because this was the first time that you guys had actually met in person when Casey came to Houston and we all had dinner together because that's back when we were allowed to hang out, both have events and eat inside together without freaking out that we were going to kill somebody. And it was kind of this whole like love at first sight situation. And so this, you know, love affair with my little sisters has kind of continued until now. And I've been so proud of the things that you guys have been doing. So first and foremost, let's provide a little bit of context to everyone that's listening here. Can you guys each just give me, you know, like your 2-minute spiel on how you got into the field of ABA and decided that like this was what you wanted to do?
All right, let me get us started. So how did I get into the field of behavior analysis? I was an undergrad with recreational therapy, and I worked in a rehab with stroke, spinal cord injury, brain injury, and I just felt I've always loved to work with people with some kind of disability to help them to like go back to like doing what they could do before their disability, provide them with a meaningful life. And I ended up getting involved with a program that was for adults with developmental disabilities. And it was, again, a social recreation program, working on a lot of social skills. And I worked with them for, 10 years. And that led me to working with adults at a day program for adults with autism. And I was there for 5 years as like an RBT or direct support and then an RBT. Mm-hmm. And I just, when I, you know, I had a 1 BCBA, fell in love with ABA. I was like, this shit makes sense now. The world makes sense. Thank you, Lord. And I automatically, like I took my RBT very seriously and ended up going back to get my master's in ABA at Antioch. And I was basically, I've always just been a lifelong learner. Like I remember, Sarah, I found this podcast. This is how I met you. I thought I met you. It was, and you don't even know if you remember this, but like SR Plus with Aaron Blocker Rubin.
Aaron Blocker Rubin. I love him. Yep. Yeah, Arizona United in Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was always someone who like wanted to learn everything ABA and listen to every podcast ABA. And I heard you and I was like, this chick is cool and different than anyone I had seen in the field. Right. Like she's like got hoops and she's talking so cool and just like so relatable. And I was like, okay, I need to now follow you. So I'm a little bit of a stalker. Mm-hmm. And I ended up seeing that you were presenting at the business boot camp in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so I had sent you a message on Instagram or something, but I ended up just as an RBT, I begged my company, please send me to this business boot camp. And they're like, what are you going to do here? You're like, I think I was the only RBT. Everyone else was BCBA. Yeah. And I was just like, just so eager to learn. So I saw you there. Mm-hmm. And so basically then, so we looked up to you, was like, she's just got a great presence. She's like this business. And I wanted to do the same thing. And yeah. I remember leaving that conference, there was a talk about one of the guys was presenting on like this Medicaid fraud that he went through.
Oh, yeah.
And like
Mark Claypool for Chance Light. It was in South Carolina. It was like this, like what, like $10 million settlement they had to make with it was very scary.
I like shit my pants, went back to my boss, and I'm like, I'm never doing insurance. We are never taking Medicaid.
Yeah.
But basically, that's how I got into it. And I've just always been someone who just wants to keep learning and keep growing and connect with everyone. So that's my kind of background.
Leah, what about you?
So sometimes when I hear these stories, I'm always like, because because of our podcast, I hear a lot of the same stories. It's always a question like, well, I kind of fell into it, you know? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I fell into it. I'd say ABA came to me as in terms of necessity. So I always felt really lucky or that from a young age, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a teacher. Like I didn't care. I love to hustle, but I love to teach. And that's all I ever wanted to do. And then life got in the way. I got some chronic illnesses along the way, lupus, scleroderma, fingers falling off along the way. And
so which is not a lie, by the way. That's not a lie. Fingers have fallen off.
No, that's not a lie. I am missing three fingertips. So all this was on the way of trying to teach, and I just didn't. I barely made it through grad school in terms of being able, thank God I was a special ed major, because if they didn't make accommodations or modifications, they'd be like, you know, that's all we teach about.
Yep.
So I did a lot of school from the hospital, and I don't even know how I finished grad school. And I got my master's in special ed from University of Maryland. And then I started teaching, and I tried being a hero working at a low income school in DC, and it was a charter school. The hours were very demanding, you know, because of the nature that the kids would go there for breakfast, for lunch, someone would stay for dinner. So it was very long. And being someone who was very physically active before, I could not keep up at all. And I would catch anything the kids had, I'd be hospitalized. So I'd be like in for 2 weeks, and it was just embarrassing and stressful. And so I had to leave my job after 2 months of teaching. And I'm like, well, what now? And I'm living in DC. And I'm like, University of Maryland was really behavior-based. This one class I took, I thought it was really behavior-based. Yeah. I'm like, this will be so easy. I'll just take coursework. And I signed up at FIT to take the courses. And I'm like, whoa, this is way deeper than I thought it was. And so I started doing ABA. It took me 5 ever to complete my hours because I could never hold a full-time job because of my health. I could probably work like 10 hours a week, which I think a lot of people don't necessarily know about me because they see me maybe on Instagram or on anything and I'm sitting at my desk or doing something. And I do have a lot of vocal energy. So you wouldn't know that I'm like exhausted all the time. But so for me, ABA made a lot of sense also. And again, like it brought me here by necessity. I was like, oh, okay, it's still a way to teach. I'll have to be in contact with less students at a time. So I could kind of keep up with like who's sick, who's not. I'm not just going to a big classroom and catching everything going on. And then I was ready to take my test after, I think, like 2.5 years of collecting hours. But God had other plans. And what I mean by that is literally that's when my fingers started freezing off.
Yeah.
I had a gallbladder surgery that resulted in me losing 3 fingertips over the next 4 months. I watched them decompose in front of me, and I literally lost my entire everything about me. Like I lost my identity. I lost my brain in terms of like just remembering something so simple. You could be like, Leah, the red cow, what did I say? I'd be like, I have no idea. I was so medicated on so many drugs, just in so much pain. I felt like I had nothing. My parents had to like wipe me in the toilet, dress me. And so I was pretty much down to nothing, or so I felt. Mm-hmm. And I thought the test was over. Anyways, once I got my fingertips amputated, I was like, I'm taking this fucking test. It's the only thing I have left in my life to do. Yeah. Whether I practice or not, I don't care. I'm just taking this test to prove that like I have some value to myself. It was like a myself thing. And I would sit at this one bubble tea shop every day and just write my notes over and over. And I had these huge bandages that had to be changed 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. And I would just write all my notes out beautiful. And obviously I'd get distracted. And so I was like, and I get on Instagram. I'm like, okay, I got to make an Instagram just for my study notes to look at it. It will be like a pretty aesthetic place to look at it. And so I started this account, Study Notes ABA, not trying to make it any business, not anything, just as a visual, like something for me to look at. And once I passed the test, I took the test and I passed. I had this thing in my head of like, okay, dude, if I could pass this test, also, please, everyone know, I have the most severe case of ADD, ADHD, like to the point that like it will take me maybe an hour to get one t-shirt from the laundry room to my room because I'll do it like 13 times and forget it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if I could pass this without being able to take my meds or with my fingers falling off, I could get anyone to pass. And so I worked as a clinician for a little while, and matching law stated that I found myself more focused on having this Instagram and enjoying teaching it to individuals, like the reinforcement of people passing mm-hmm. who had like taken it multiple times. I was like, I love this. I'm still able to teach. I'm able to use my art. I could have my dream of being Chelsea Handler all in one place. And so I'm like, I could tell these jokes here. And so that's how I really fell into ABA, and more specifically, the space that I'm in now.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, that was like loaded and long. And I feel bad because you guys know the story. Casey's like literally heard the story of my fingers. Maybe.
I know. I think that's why she fell asleep while you were talking. No, it's a great story. And part of the reason I wanted you guys to talk about this is this. When I came into the field, it was a totally different vibe than now. When I first came into the field, behavior analysts largely worked in school districts. There was no health insurance funding. We were a very small group. You know, everyone kind of knew each other. We were still just kind of this like emerging, like radical field. You know, I got recruited to teach at this school down here in California for individuals with, you know, severe developmental disabilities and behavior disorders. And we were like this like funky, hippie, you know, wild group of people that just like loved what we did. We loved, you know, serving others. We loved the challenges that came with, you know, dealing with complex behavior problems. And we wanted to like do good in the world. And part of the reason, again, like I wanted to talk to you about this is because you guys were coming up in a completely different environment. And I know for Casey, you and I have talked about this before. You know, you realized that the traditional BCBA job wasn't for you because you worked at this agency, and I see this happen all the time in this discipline, when you are in a field that is rapidly growing and there is tremendous pressure to serve more people because, you know, we know how effective our work can be with specific populations, especially autism. And there's a tremendous amount of financial pressure for businesses to have BCBAs bill a lot of hours. Because this is, you know, in terms of like the medical coding, this is what unlocks, you know, the highest billable rate and allows RBTs to work under you. Often what happens is people get put into positions that they are not prepared to do and they don't have the competencies for. And I know that that happened to you, Casey, and you were just like, whoa, I'm being asked to do all of these things. I don't have the appropriate supports in place. And so that really led you to look at something outside of a traditional clinical job because you're just like, I'm not going to be successful at this. And more importantly, I'm not going to be able to support the individuals that we're serving in the way that they should be supported. And I'm hearing this, and I know that you guys hear this more and more in our field. And this is, of course, an entirely different podcast of what do we do to help support this, you know, very, very young group of individuals that are, you know, tasked to work with, you know, incredibly vulnerable populations. And the work is really great, but all of our work is like, you know, contingent on passing the exam, which is in becoming board certified, which is a minimum qualification.
Yeah.
And how do we wrap our arms around this field in the way that it needs to be wrapped around to support and help grow these individuals and these competencies when there is discord between what you can are allowed to do and what you should do. And So for both of you, you know, Leah, more for health reasons, Casey, you know, more for this reason, you were like, the traditional BCBA route isn't my jam. What made you guys decide that you wanted to do the Behavior Bitches podcast? Because this is obviously separate from Snobba, and this has been honestly, you know, the most outward facing, you know, vehicle that's really allowed you to, you know, have an incredible reach. What was the thought process behind it?
So that was definitely honestly, it was also like demand. So our students were like, we love coming to the collective. It's so fun. The examples you give, we wish that we had something to listen to when we're driving. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, we'll put a podcast together. I don't think we took it so seriously about what, like, first of all, how much work a podcast takes, as yeah. I'm sure you know, a lot of planning, a lot of organizing with guests. I mean, everything. And we would find ourselves on the phone all the time talking about these random life topics. And I'm like, dude, how cool is that? We should get someone who's a hostage negotiator on there and talk to him and let other people see that behavior analysis is used in other places. So mm-hmm. it really just started as we never used it as a place to make money. It was more like hey, we could disseminate, people could listen to this and hear how cool behavior analysis is beyond talking about just verbal behavior or insurance or billing with these mm-hmm. or, you know, these different, it was just a way of, and also I think a big idea of it was bringing these people who you look at as like so high in the field or mighty or have done amazing things in the field and bringing them to human level. Like there's mm-hmm. just something cool about hearing someone, you're like, oh my God, they've done all this stuff. And then you hear them like drop an F-bomb and you're like, you know, and you're like, oh my God, they're human too. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big thing behind it. So Casey, do you have anything to add?
I do. So I will say that when Liat first had this idea, and I know Sarah, one of the questions that you said, and you'll probably get to it, but the three of us are do now, ask questions later. That is not me. Okay. I am not a do now, ask questions later. I am a play it safe Sally. I am, and I, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a term. I live in fear 99% of time of any making any mistake, doing anything that could ever result in me being in trouble. Honestly, like, so when Liat came to me and said this, I was like, that's a little aggressive. But mm-hmm. what it's turned into for me is this passion for, like, you just talked about my experience of, like, I didn't have any, you know, great supervision. I didn't have, mm-hmm. You know, I got thrown into a clinical program director job with running, you know, I was an RBT one day and then I was running the program with zero training, mm-hmm. scared shitless. And there's nothing worse going into work every day and feeling like I have no idea. And I was just spinning in circles all day. Yeah.
But hey, you went to that behavior boot camp with Sarah. You didn't know what to do?
I know. I didn't solve all of your problems in 6 hours, Casey. I mean, come on.
I did have a shit ton of notes that I would refer to, but it was just crazy. But so what it's turned into, I think, for me is inspiring the new BCBAs that are coming up to advocate for supervision, to mm-hmm. advocate for a mentor, to hear our kind of like real stories and being open and disseminating the science in a way that people can understand and then makes them fall in love with the field again. I get so many messages like, I was about to leave the field. I had this horrible experience, but listening to the podcast, like, you've made me fall in love with like my job again or ABA mm-hmm. again or whatever. So I think that's really been what it's evolved into for me.
Yeah. And I should have been more specific on the question in terms of like, do not ask questions later. Liat and I are do now ask questions later people. And I think for me, I've become less so as I have gotten older. But sometimes, you know, I will say it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. And especially if you
definitely
are, you know, in an industry like ours, which is historically rooted in academia, which is historically rooted in a lot of white male science, you know, white ivory tower, you know, kind of like shaminess. When you do things that are disruptive to the status quo, there's going to be people that don't like it. Mm-hmm. And I have experienced that, you know, myself, you guys have experienced that yourself, but how has also, I mean, maybe Liat, this is more like a me and you conversation, you know, but how has this also benefited you, because it's not like all like, oh, it's so hard and everyone has hateration. It also allows, you know, you to really like be unleashed on some and like to remove any of your own limitations.
Definitely. So something interesting, again, and Casey and I talk about this a lot, and it's just like our learning history. So Casey, first of all, is, and she's open about it, so I could say this, but like her background she grew up with, like she's the first person in her family to come and, you know, like really, and like break the mold and do something amazing. So like, there's a lot of this place of fear of like she literally thinks like, oh my God, if we accidentally say the wrong page of Cooper, like we're going to get our license taken away. Right. And I'm like, dude, we're not going to get our license taken away. Like they have so much more shit to do.
Yeah.
And so we're working on one side of that. I'm more like, I don't know if it's my history of like what I've been through. And I didn't even know if I could practice a BCBA because of my health. I'm like, what do I have to lose? Okay.
Yeah.
Worst case, God forbid, I mean, I would never want to, I get my BCBA taken away and I'd still teach behavior analysis of how to pass the test, right? Like I'm not doing any like thing that needs to be billed to insurance, whatever. So I didn't have as many fears. And I also had nothing left. It was like, what the hell, what is there to lose? And I also kind of felt like I don't know if anyone, like I am not an academic. Like I could tell you that both of you guys are way more academic. I don't enjoy reading research articles. I'd rather someone tell me the findings of it. Yeah. I don't enjoy sitting for long periods of time. I just love being able to manipulate behavior in everyday life. So it was like, this is what I want to do. I'm like, I'm down to nothing. I'm going to get it started. Like what is there? And yes, I've got shit along the way. Because no one likes a change, I don't think. And people who have been around longer don't like a change when it's that another group of people are really appreciating this. Like, wait, we've been doing this for so long. Why are these girls? I mean, I get it. Like, they're calling themselves the behavior bitches. Like, I mean, I don't expect them to be up like, or these like, you know, these founding fathers to be up and understanding that like bitches could be a positive thing. Because of like Sherry Argov's Why Men Love Bitches book, you know, like I don't expect them to know this.
Yeah.
But so it was kind of a shock value. And it's, you know, and I think it's taken a lot of like proving yourself in terms of like, oh, wait, maybe they do have more to offer. Maybe they do have more brain cells than just calling themselves like these silly like sorority bitches. And like, you know, because it's walking a fine line because a lot of I've had so much fun with the theme of Study Notes ABA of playing this, like, I don't know, this like basic, like, it's just like, it's been so fun, even writing descriptions of products and, you know, making it relatable and funny, but it also could come across as like, oh my God, who are these girls who literally think they could live in a sorority forever, which I wasn't even in a sorority. Actually, I did pay for a sorority for a semester, but I never did anything, but just this idea. And so you're kind of constantly having to prove yourself. And, and at the same time, give no fucks, but you also do have to give a fuck in certain things because especially in today's temperament, it is so sensitive. Anything you say in the wrong direction could, and this is beyond even the field of behavior analysis. Like as soon as you have a social media platform, it's like, it's pressure.
Right. And you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, and so you have to, I think, like accept that there is going to be a certain amount of, you know, kind of hateration, feedback. And that's just, that's part of the job, you know? And like, for me, I think that that's been one of the most challenging things to reconcile because I think, you know, it's like, I think I'm both like Liat and Casey. And I think that's part of the reason why the three of us get along because I see myself in both of you in different ways. And I am, to Casey's point, I am the rule follower. I am the one that wants to, you know, be compliant. I don't want to make an error. And I think that's so ingrained into our field. I think this is also something that's really ingrained in socialized for women. Like we always have to, you know, we know, especially women in leadership, like Like, we know that if we want to hold on to our leadership positions, we have to work twice or three or four times as hard. We know that women in leadership that have other identities on top of just being female, whether that's race, it's culture, it's religion, have to work even harder. And so when I perceive that I've made a mistake or a misstep, I am just like flagellate. Flog myself.
I castigate.
Like, I'm so upset with myself. But at the same time, I have this, like, just, you know, incredible, like, deep-seated, like, motivating operation to, like, challenge the status quo because I don't accept it. And I think that part of what's happened in our field, especially that I find fascinating, is some of the hateration that has come to people like me or to people like you is because there are other older people, especially in leadership, that don't necessarily like the direction of the field. And this is a power play, and this is about status. You know, people will do anything in the world to protect their status. And my feeling has always been like, gosh, I'm on this planet for a finite amount of time. And so I want to spend my time wisely. I want to spend it doing things that matter to me. And I want to spend it mentoring and shaping others to be able to come up in my place to do something different and to have a different voice and to offer different choices. And I see that as an integral and necessary piece of being in leadership. But I don't think that everyone views leadership in the same way. And so I think there's also this, again, there's I think some generational differences. I think there's some value differences. And, you know, I think that a lot of what you guys have done, you've been able to, you know, obtain these large audiences that a lot of other like well-known organizations don't have the reach. They don't know how to engage with or even understand how to kind of segment these different kind of BCBAs in different periods of their life. And I think also we're at this place in our culture, and I don't know if you guys feel this way about COVID. I feel like COVID has made me like the most like honest person ever. I'm just like, dude, like everyone has been so miserable. People have been stuck at home. I mean, Leanne, I know you went through, I mean, like during the beginning of COVID, you didn't even leave your house for like months. You know, we're all, you know.
I still haven't, honey. I'm in the same spot.
It's been like a year. And so I'm just, you know, and like, you guys know what happened with me last year in terms of, you know, losing Fade. I've had so much stuff happen, you know, with my own kids and the work that I was doing got totally screwed. I lost work. And I'm just like, I just don't have any more interest in not living a life that is just like real and authentic. And like, if people aren't interested in it, like, that's cool. If I'm not your cup of tea, like, that's okay.
It's fine.
Right. Like, yeah, like, it's thing. Like, I'm not for everybody, right? So this goes into then my next question. So you guys are, you know, trailblazing. You've, you know, created this huge platform. Who do you go to for mentorship and advice? Who are the people that, you know, you seek out? Because you guys are still, you know, young in your careers. And, you know, spoiler alert, I mean, I'm older than you, but like, we're never going to have all the answers and you're always going to need support. So who are those people for you?
So first of all, one thing I wanted to add from before also, which could lead into this, and I see Casey about to say an answer. She could answer this, but there's one thing that has become like highly reinforcing to me. And it's this idea of this, you know, like sometimes girls or whatever, whoever, they love the guy who's like hard to get or something, right? Like every girl, like it's like, oh my God, he likes me, whatever. We have had multiple situations where someone be like, yeah, my professor mentioned that there was a podcast called Behavior Bitches and he was a little concerned, whatever, about what our field is going to. Those are the people that I love to reach out to most and being like, hey, professor, blah, blah, blah. I hear that you've made such a cunt. Like, I'll look up what research they've done, what like research you've done in this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. I would love to have you on. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like this challenge of someone who, you know, ahead of time, like it's called the Behavior Bitches. They're like, oh, I don't know if I could be on something called that, blah, blah, blah. They come on, and then this person is now your mentor too, because you've been able to connect and talk to these people who you might have never come into contact with. And I just – so we've been able, like, in multiple different areas, I feel, to find – like, I feel like I am able to seek mentorship in a lot of people that I would never have had contact with if not for having this platform that was a place to invite them to. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, like, who are you? What do you want? It was like, we kind of have something going on here if you want to join. So I'd say That was definitely one way. And another way is I have had really good people that I've come into contact with along my journey in terms of like where I worked. And a lot of stuff I had to kind of learn for myself because I didn't have the opportunities to ever work full time. So I had to ask a lot of questions, a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I will, you know, when we were able to bring like Dr. Maggie Pavone onto our team, like I just feel like she's like a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And she literally, I mean, her brain is something else in terms of like she could like cite research articles that like aren't even out yet. I'm like, how do you even know about this? Like about any topic or about anything or so just like different people like that that we've come into contact with. I think I seek out a lot of mentorship in that, like just having these people like on a even on a text basis, like, hey, mm-hmm. are we explaining this right? Like, is this really mm-hmm. what a tandem schedule of reinforcement is? Because I'm worried I've been teaching it wrong for this, you know? Mm-hmm. So just kind of on specific areas, asking specific people on what their expertise is.
Yeah.
Casey, I feel like you'll have a different answer.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that following what Liat was saying, that people that we have been able to get on the podcast are people that I have always looked up to. When I was studying, when I was in grad school, like I would listen to all of Sitecore videos, like Ryan and Brad, and just like the fact that like, yeah, we're, you know, we text them like if, when we need help or we have questions, we've collaborated. People like you, people like Ann Burns, who wrote the ethics book, people that like when we asked her, like, asked Anne, like, you know, is it okay to call ourselves the behavior bitches? She's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. But like, even being able to ask those questions to people that I've always looked up to in the field is just so amazing. And I'm just blessed and grateful that we've, you know, been able to break down that barrier and have people on the podcast that maybe have questioned, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think something – it's so interesting, and this isn't, you know, just part of like behavior analyst culture, but I think this happens in other industries as well. When you have people that have public personas, there, you know, again, almost becomes, you know, we talked about this earlier, this kind of like separation and like, well, they're not going to want to talk to me or they're not going to have time for me. And I'm the kind of person, I'm like, I love connecting with new people. I love talking to new people, helping to mentor and support people as they grow up in the field is something that is like deeply important to me. So like if anyone ever reaches out to me, I'm always going to email you back or talk to you or provide advice. Because again, like I think that that's, you know, I'm blessed to be able to be in this space in my career where I can do that. And I just see how important it is because if you don't spend that time, then who's going to come up and take your place and who's going to continue to kind of grow and question what we're doing and expand what we're doing. And so I would really encourage people, like, don't be scared. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Someone ignores you? Okay, well, you're going to continue to live your life. You're fine. But you'll never know. You'll never know.
And I think
what it could be if you don't ask.
People do not know how small our field still is. And like,
comparatively,
like, and how, like, in what's the word? Whatever. But it's like, what?
Like, in relation to something? Is that what you're trying to say?
It's like, I don't know where I was going with that, but just like in such baby form. Like, it's still
it's
like
nascent.
A fetus.
It's in its nascent phase, right? It's in this.
Okay,
like,
that's a good word. Whatever that means, it sounds smart.
Nascent means it's an emerging. It's an emerging.
Like that.
Yeah.
You guys are the academics. I told you that. Mm-hmm. I like will have some funny jokes on the side, but you guys are the smart ones. like it's so – and I think like if you're someone studying, you look at it as like, oh, it's this big field that's been around forever. It's really not. So you really could be in reach with anyone. Like, I mean, even if you want to like talk about an article somewhere or share it, you could literally reach out to the author of that a research article. And they will be happy as a pig in shit that you reached out to them and are recognizing what they've written. You know, you assume like, oh, they're not going to want me, this random girl, like sharing their article. They're going to ignore me. Like, they're real humans too. Yeah. And like the idea that someone like they hear you on this podcast or they probably think, oh, like these people aren't reachable or it's like, no, dude, it's me. Like when you're responding to me on my Instagram account, it's me. It's me telling you like, yeah, dude, that's the difference between stimulus generalization and response generalization. Or like, I'm so proud of you for passing your test. Like it's still very human. And And I think that people need to realize that it's not like these like 10th degree LinkedIn relations away. Like you could, you could literally reach out to someone on their actual email and get a response, set up a call. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, so let me, this actually segues perfectly into our next kind of discussion topic is like the fact that we all are real humans and we, you know, actively participate in the platforms that we use. And this has been a blessing because it allows you to have, you know, incredible reach in a way that you wouldn't otherwise, but also can be a curse. And so I have noticed for myself that I think that people often think that they know me better than they do. And so what I wanted to know from you guys is what's the biggest misconception that you think that people have about who you are? And Casey, let's start with you.
Yeah. So, this is, you know, I'm definitely running a social media account is actually, I was telling the other day, I'm like, I want to quit. I do. Yeah. Like I've lost like who I'm like, who am I? Like, who are these people that I'm like thinking I'm having relationships with, but they're not real. Right. Like some of them are like, you've never met that person. You've never, you know, and there's that's during COVID, of course, now we're like all meeting on Zoom and forming these communities, but I've lost like my actual real friends in like my real circle, in my real world here. Like, I don't even talk to them. I don't, my family, I don't fault, like my Facebook is so clogged with just study notes and behavior bitches. I don't even know what my friends and family are doing.
Yeah.
And that's like an issue that I have to like work on. Yeah. And also like, yeah, I'm the, you know, there's a person behind the account and it's like, you know, everyone asks me for advice and I'm so happy to like, you know, want to help. And it's just, it is, you don't realize it's such a full time job. Like I can't just take a shit and look at my Instagram. It's work. Like it is work. And, and it's like, you know, so like finding the balance between that, I think is really hard, but I think a misconception is that. And I know that I come off like happy and cheerful and like positive and all that, but like,
but I'm really pissed. I'm just kidding.
No, but inside, like before anything I do, before we teach, before we podcast, I am like literally suffering from like severe anxiety. Like my palms sweat, my heart races. Like I am social settings and social situations are so like, they cause me so much stress. And I, and it's crazy because I'm, you know, running a podcast and teaching on very public platforms, but behind the scenes, like the real Casey is struggling. And like, that is one thing that like Leah and I have been talking a lot about lately. It's like, it's definitely like past trauma that needs to be healed. But like, that's a whole other podcast too. But yeah, I think that that's might be a misconception that like, oh, well, she's just so confident. Like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not confident at all.
Leah, what about you?
It's exhausting. Honestly, having a social media platform is exhausting. And I feel like, and it's also like this like tear between like, it sounds annoying. Like it sounds like a first world problem. You saying like being on social media is exhausting, like, but you have this whole audience and whatever it is. Now, the one thing I can say is I am, if you hang out with me in real life or you hang, or you watch my Instagram live, I am the same person. Yeah. So what you're seeing there is very accurate. If I'm not in a place to post because I'm feeling sick with my lupus, I'm feeling depressed, Ellie Run and I are fighting, like I'm not going to get on there because I can't fake it. I'm not like, yeah, everything's great. I can't. So I do, and I do try and make an extra effort to show these real life things because I know like through filters and like showing the good parts of things, like, you know, I know people see like, oh my God, her office is so cute. She has this flamingo wallpaper and like life is perfect with her French bulldogs. And that's what they're seeing. And a lot of people I think also like are very quick to shit on things. Like this girl, like even when I did that thing on Instagram the other day that all of us were doing, I saw you did it too, of tell me something that you assumed, or assumption you made about me. Like one of the assumptions was, you had no student debt and your parents paid off all of it. I was like, actually, no, I paid off all of it myself. It was mine. And that was the first thing I did when, you know, the company started making any money and I was able to pay that. Okay.
Yeah.
Second thing, your parents or someone wealthy funded your entire company. No, this company has literally been, it started off with everything free. There was no overhead. Like I literally had a free Zoom account. Everyone would log in, log off at 45 minutes and then get back on. There was no funding going on. There's no one behind it like that. Your company is huge and you have so many people working for you and you guys are just like killing it. I'm like, there's three of us behind the scenes and Ellie runs shipping stuff out of our garage.
Yep.
You know, and or like, you know, and it's like people are so quick to make these assumptions about so many things. And there's certain things that it's like, okay, cool. I don't give a fuck. You want to, do you say fuck on here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you've already said it four times, I've been taking data. So it's irrelevant at this point.
Okay. Beep, beep, beep. Like just the idea that, you know, a lot of things I'm fine to be like, I don't care if they think this about me. I don't care if they think that I have this. But there are some things that do matter what people are thinking because they've made assumptions like this person doesn't care about human rights because they're not posting about this or they're not doing this. And it's like, that's not true at all. Like that's not me. That's, you know, I sometimes, and it's this constant pressure of, I care so much about these different things, about different things. And if people wanted to like actually get to know me, not on my business page, I'll tell them like, if you want to ask me about a certain thing, like, well, how do you feel about this going on with this? I could tell you, but I often don't feel, first of all, like it's hard because I feel like I could get shit for what I'm about to say, but in Casey's probably like shitting her pants about everything I'm about to say, but sometimes that's how we work. Like I think before every statement I say in class, like every joke that's coming out, she's like, no, seriously, literally. You could see her in class, like her fingers are like in her mouth, like biting. And I'm like, chill out. It was a joke about my ex-boyfriend. But sometimes I don't feel like I am qualified enough or to be like the head spokesperson on something. Or it's like, I want to be really good at what I'm really good at. Like, and if it's like applying behavior analysis to real life, that's what I want to do. And that's what I want to talk about. And that's where I want to make my difference. Like, I feel every day that I am, like the fact that I'm able to get a badass BCBA out there and make a difference in this kid's life, like that's where my passion lies. It doesn't mean, and I think this is a big problem that people assume, is that it means I don't care about X issue, Y issue, Z issue. That's not it at all. It's that it's really overwhelming trying to make so many people happy. And please, like anything I'm – and you know, it's crazy because like I – again, Casey and I are opposite. I don't get – but even saying this, I feel nervous because I've been shit on.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is not to anyone else that I don't care about something. I do. But I think that also people don't know that certain things, you also – when you're relying on something also as your livelihood and you have to run a business, you also have to like set some boundaries as to where – like what you're willing to, you know, share and what you're not. And just, I wish people would make the assumption, like, let me look at this person, like who they are, but I mean, and you wouldn't know, you don't see me behind the scenes. You don't see what I'm learning behind. You don't see what I'm doing. You don't know what organizations I'm involved in, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like that's like the blessing and the curse of social media is that there are these glimpses, but that's what they are glimpses. And so from like a behavior analytic, you know, perspective, if you really, for example, you know, subscribe to the idea of like, hey, how do we take a circumstantial view of behavior? Meaning, how do we understand the circumstances and the context that has shaped someone's behaviors, that what I'm seeing right now in the present moment is the result of, you know, XYZ learning history, reinforcement history, punishment history, but that is, it's antithetical to how our society operates right now. Because what we're saying is you posted this 15-second thing on, you know, Instagram or, you know, Snapchat or TikTok or whatever, that is who you are. I'm not going to ask or be curious about any of the context around it. And then I'm going to then make assumptions based on this like very small glimpse of a snippet of one piece of a very complex life. And that's, you know, where I think the social media thing can be challenging is, you know, it is just
that. What about
that.
You? Do you find the same thing also?
Yeah. And I try to be, and I'm subscribed to the similar thing. Like if I don't feel like posting, I'm not going to. I don't force anything. What you see is what you get. I mean, you guys know me, you know, in a different context as a, you know, Sarah, like not just like public persona Sarah and sneakers and, you know, the hoop earrings and loud and always happy. Like I have, you know, struggles, and it's like, you know, I went through a very painful divorce in the last few years. I sold my business, which was, you know, a blessing, but also made me question like everything and that I've done and everything that I am. You know, I lost one of my closest friends in a very, you know, tragic fire, and her son. And these are, you know, this has like rocked me to my core. And so I've tried to be honest about that and really try to also like model this kind of like compassionate responding. Because really in the world right now, I feel like, for fuck's sake, there's so much horrible shit going on. To the extent that we can allow and extend to each other, curiosity, forgiveness, and allow that there, you know, people are fundamentally understand that most people are just trying to do the best that they can at that given time. And if that's the perspective and that's like our baseline with each other, then that allows us to build more connections together. It allows us to understand each other better. But I think when we start with a lot of preconceived ideas or assumptions, it makes it more challenging. But I also understand that it's easier said than done. And I think that this is a continual, for me, work in progress, and likely a work in progress for you guys too, to kind of figure out where is that sweet and soft spot, where I can be myself, where I can also, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And when you were doing something that is, you know, your financial sustainability, you were going to have to distribute more effort towards that, because this is how you can make sure that you can afford the food that you need to buy or pay for your medical care that you need to receive. And that matters. And that doesn't mean it's like the vendor. It doesn't mean that it's separate things, but that you're going to have to be mindful about where response effort is distributed. And all of us have to make different choices, and all of us are still learning. And so how can we continue to, you know, ask hard questions with each other, be in relationship with each other? But I think, you know, it's being that kind of just having that softness and not necessarily assuming the worst, but assuming that you don't know what you don't know. And I think that that's really important. And I think for a lot of people right now, they assume that they know everything because of 30 seconds or 1 minute or, you know, a certain picture or a certain, you know, post. And that's, again, just one snapshot and one data point. It's not everything.
And so, I also want to say,
it's a probe. It's a probe, Sarah.
Yeah.
It's one probe.
And like on the good side, like I am so blessed for the relationships that I've formed with, you know, different people on Zoom. Like I had, you know, when COVID first started, I randomly put out to Study Notes ABA community, like, let's do a morning meetup. Like no one's going anywhere. Like whoever wants to show up. It's going to be like, maybe we read like a motivation. We watch a TED talk. We do like a yoga class or a meditation.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we still meet. Like we were meeting every day for like months, but now we meet like once a month and like have like a happy hour. And there's a lot of just like good stuff that has come out of, you know, not only COVID and being home, but like having an online presence. Like there's been a lot of amazing relationships that I've formed. And I'm very blessed for that. And so I didn't, you know, I know I was saying it's like hard as fuck. It is hard, but it's also there's,
but it's all the, but it's all the things, right? And that's the thing. It's like, it's all the things. It's awesome. And it's hard. It's fun. And it's work. And I think that that's kind of, again, the multidimensionality of who we are, of what we do. I think that's the missing piece. And, you know, humans, I mean, obviously our tendency is we like to put things in categories because it makes it easier for us to assimilate information. But again, you know, if we really truly are behavior analytic, if we really truly are having a circumstantial view of behavior, we can understand that, again, that we're more complex than we are simple. And as you continue to live life for more years, that just becomes more salient. And so that's what I'm hoping that we can, part of the message that we can come, you know, really kind of have people take home from this podcast episode is, you know, that you can challenge things, you can be yourself, you can, you know, have your values. And it doesn't mean that you don't think or about these other things, or it doesn't mean that you don't struggle, but you can be all of those things. And that's been a piece of really starting the DeFi community that's been critically important for me, is like, we want to be able to, for people to really see their whole selves. We want people to be able to express their whole selves, because I truly believe that that's where connections can be made. And that's where the understanding starts, is being able to be all of the things, and like, that's okay. So I want to wrap this up with one last question for you guys.
That was beautifully said. By the way,
thank you. Thanks.
I completely, wholeheartedly agree. And I feel bad. You just caught me in a moment. And so it sounded like I was saying only the dark things about it. But no.
But it's all the things. It's all of the things.
Exactly. It's all the things. You come in contact with so much reinforcement on one sense. But then the other thing is like, and obviously sometimes the other things just seem more salient. And you really do have to remind yourself of like, but dude, look at all the good we're seeing. Like, look how many people are connected. And so what you said is all the things.
Thank you.
It was perfect.
So what does the future hold for the Behavior Bitches?
Woo!
Just a light question to wrap this up. I mean, like, you know, nothing intense.
I mean, we have a lot of
episode 100. Momentum. Episode 100 is what the future holds.
Okay.
Continuing to – and we have a lot of plans for a lot of things, and I can't just say it's Behavior Bitches. I'd say it's really Study Notes and ABA – Study Notes ABA are really like one thing, but just one's a podcast and one's – so we have a lot of plans in terms of really to continue providing a supportive environment. You know, we just started CEUs so that we have something like beyond just the study prep. We kind of – really focus hard on one project at a time. There's so many things I would love to do. I just – everything takes really long. I think that's the thing. Like even when you like bring a box out of like, ah, it's a BCBA box. Yay, you passed. That took a year to make.
Yeah.
So like each thing, I have lots of ideas. But they all take time, I would say. And – for Behavior Bitches, I mean, Casey, I don't know if you're adding anything in here, but you guys see, like, I talk a lot. So just keep putting out episodes. I think we're so proud of ourselves that we've been consistent with one thing in our life to put something out every single week. It's like that – I think we're shocked all the time too. Like, dude, do we – like right now we have like 7 podcasts in the arsenal like ready to go. Mm-hmm. We've never had that before. We are so disorganized. We're usually doing it like the night before. So just keeping going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say just, you know, keep reaching more people that, you know, want to come on, educating ourselves. Just honestly, it's weird. I always think like, oh, do we stop at 100? Like, do we keep going? Like, we'll probably keep going because we already have, I think, recorded till 100. So like, and we're recording 4 more this week. So yeah, I just keep connecting with people and spreading the love.
Yeah. Well, I like to end the podcast with a more kind of like religious tradition that I have made a secular one in Defy. And that is the whole concept of a benediction. Like, how do you wrap up the episode? And I hope you guys understand and feel from me that I am really proud of the work that you're doing. It's interesting. It's fun. You've been able to bring behavior analysis. You've made it really meaningful and accessible for a lot of people. And that has been a challenge in our field. Like, how do we disseminate this in a way that's interesting? How do we get people that aren't even in the field to want to lean into this and really kind of understand that better? And that's something that we're trying to do in the DeFi community as well. And without being willing to defy, you know, the norms, being willing to kind of defy what, you know, typically a behavior analyst is supposed to be, or a, you know, female leader is supposed to be, like, we'd never do anything different. We'd never experience anything different. And I'm cautiously optimistic about where our field is going, and that we have this great opportunity right now to really, you know, continue to expand our reach, to reach beyond autism, to reach beyond, you know, mostly young women that are behavior analysts, to reach other, you know, cultural groups, racial groups, gender identities, because we know how powerful the science can be in terms of changing our own lives. And I think all of us, you know, have experienced that in a very personal way. And you can do it with joy and fun and fucks. Joy, fun, and fucks. And so I wish for you both more joy, fun, and fucks in 2021.
Thank you, Sarah. Yeah. I also wanted to say, I really do love what you guys are doing with Defy, and I'm in Danielle's Dreamer Doer.
Yep.
And it's literally like taking me to church every Tuesday night. Yeah. And like, I do not stay up late. And it's at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard. That is late. Yeah.
Casey's in bed by 7. It's weird.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say thank you for all the work that you guys are doing over there. And it's so needed. Like that personal connection that doesn't just have to be always like studying for the exam, which we do all the time. Do you know what I mean? So it's a nice just change of pace.
Break.
Danielle just has a way of like, I don't know. It's she's so special. Like she,
it's a gift.
It's a gift. Oh man! So shout out to you guys.
Yay! We out. That's it.
Peace.
Boom. Thanks for listening to Defy. We really appreciate your support, and we hope that you listen to all of the different podcasts that we've put together. And guess what? We're available on all of the podcast platforms and on social media too. And we even have a website. Like seriously, we have all of that stuff. You can find us at www.defy.community. You can find us on Instagram at defy.comm, on Facebook using the same defy.comm, or you can even send me an email if you just want to chat about something or if you have an idea of a podcast that you think would be really great for our community. Our email is contact@defy.community. We hope that you have found something that you can take away from this podcast that will impact your life. We hope that you continue to defy society's expectations of you, because remember, baby, well-behaved women rarely make history.